I've figured out that I'm just screaming into the void. In reality, I'm actually not talking to three people.
Ah, it'll be fine. Don't be silly. Don't mind that, audience. Welcome back. It's just that kind of week, you know? Just that kind of week. You've planned everything. You've gotten everything accounted for in a sort of way. You've been able to... There's been 100 different balls, and you've been able to juggle them all. Fantastic. Well done. But then one by one, out of your control, someone starts slapping the balls out of the air, and then eventually they all fall to the ground, and you ask them, why'd you do that? You want to know. Like, why would you want to do that to me? And they don't answer you. They just laugh maniacally, and they run away. The ball slapper in this case is... The ball slapper in this case is no one but fate. It's cruel fate causing you to, you know, become self-destructive in a lot of ways. And, you know, you try to get your life back and the house of cards continues to fall over and over again. This was just one of many examples this week of me not being able to get all of my s*** together, get all my ducks in a row, and be able to pump out an actual product. So we'll take it as it is, you know? I don't have too much of a script going on in this episode, so we're just gonna go. Audience, you and me, we're just gonna go together. We're gonna go together, audience, and we're gonna be together forever for 1,000 years. And we'll just see where we take ourselves, you know? Let the lazy river of conversation and gameplay, just let it ride. How are you doing? Oh, thank you. Thank you, audience. Thank you. Oh, I appreciate you asking me. Well, here's the thing. I noticed I've been getting a lot of sleep, which is good. But it's also bad because I don't have a lot of time to do other things that I need to do during the day. I'm hoping that this weekend will be a nice reset. I'm going to go back to Brampton. I'm going to hang out with my parents for a bit. Maybe get like a little gathering going on with my high school friends, but I don't even know if they even exist anymore. I'll be honest, I've been floating in the ether of university life for the past month and a half, so it's been rough. It's been interesting. It's been accelerating. It's been a lot of more things, but we don't have time to talk about that. I lost like 7 whole minutes trying to get all my things together and what am I gonna do? Well, you know what I'm going to do, audience. Ladles and germs, welcome to episode 6 of Independent Incidentals. Independent Incidentals. Now, today's episode is another roguelike. Woo! Yeah, hold on, I think I have you. Wait. Yeah. No, please. The pleasure is all mine, trust me. I love talking about these fun little roguelikes that just kind of crop up here and there. I'll get to why this one is kind of on the meh side of roguelikes, why it's kind of a intermediate roguelike, why I personally don't fall in love with this game compared to other games like Slay the Spire and Faster Than Light and Into the Breach. But, where should we start? Oh, yes. Why is it niche? Who published it? It's niche because I don't know who the developers are. That's the main. If you can't find any information about who is in a specific company, or it's very hard to find within, an hour or so of Googling, then it's pretty safe to say it's probably niche. It's probably very independent. So, you know, just let them do their thing. But on the Wikipedia page, there is a little bit of information that I can divulge into. Also, the gaming police are on me to me, so I'll have to make this quick. Dodrill is the name of the developers, who is comprised of, I think, 4 developers. The main one, I think his name is David Crook, if I'm not mistaken. He's the lead game designer, but all the other ones, I have no clue who they are and what they're from. But I do know specifically where they came from. The 4 developers jumped the burning ship of Mythic Entertainment. If you don't know who Mythic Entertainment is, I didn't either. They are a massively multiplayer online game that was in development since 1998, I think, and was continuing development until 2014, I'd say. 2014. They were bought by the beautiful, beautifully ethical, I'd say, company Electronic Arts back in 2012, I'd say. They got all the rights to Mythic Games, filed a bunch of copyrights in 2009, so it has to be somewhere around 2008, 2009 that Electronic Arts bought Mythic Games, somewhere around there. Don't credit me for anything. Do your own research, of course. And they were bought basically on the premise of lining their own pockets. The main reason why they pulled the plug was to line their own pockets. Look, sorry, your MMORPG wasn't performing to our standards. I guess we have to pull the plug now. Listen. Obviously, that's the angry little man in my brain screaming about the state of the world of video games. Of course it is. But I watched a recent episode about what it takes to make a game, a multiplayer game, specifically one that's PvP, successful, right? There's a lot of things you have to think about, but the main thing is how you're going to get your player base. Because here's the thing. I'm going to go in a little bit of Concord because I want to, all right? You're not going to stop me. If you don't know what Concord is, it was basically a PvP 5v5 shooting game in a la the same kind of vein as, say, Overwatch. Have you heard of that one before? A few other ones. The newest one, I think Deadlock is the newest iteration, but there's obviously Valorant and obviously a few other ones. It started with the whole... Call of Duty. What's the name of the game? Counter-Strike. Yes, the whole Counter-Strike, Rainbow Siege, all those other games kind of evolved and mingled with more flashy elements to get the kids engaged. And they wanted to make a new one. I forget who specifically came up with it. Let me look that up real quick. Concord. That's the plane. It was developed by Sony, published by Sony Entertainment. Okay, that makes sense. Here's the thing about publishers, right? They want to get interactivity. They want to make sure that the players are actually enjoying the game, right? So when you're making a game that has mechanics such as, you know, different class types, being a healer, you know, in terms of, you know, LOL and League of Legends, you have jungler, up to high laner, middle laner, all of the other kind of fun concepts. But also you got, like, you know, tank. If you're talking about Overwatch terms, you got your tank, you got your main ranged unit, you got your main fighting, melee, up in front and close and personal kind of character, healer slash support, and obviously, you know, utility. I don't play these games, so I'm going to be very bare bones with my explanations. The idea is that if you want a game that has players in it, say one of these players drops out, right? What are you going to do then? How are you going to replace them? What do you need to do in order to replace them? Right? What's the bare minimum amount of players that you need in order to make the game engaging? Right? Think about it like this. Say you need 10 players per match, right? That's 10 players, and then you have 5 different classes. You multiply that by 5. You need at least 50 people there. Okay, cool. Let's say that you have 3 different, you know, servers that you can play in, right? So say there's an American server, there's an Asian server, and there's a European server, right? That's 3 extra servers times that by 50, the amount of players that you need, right? Individual unique players that... class into a specific character, right? That's 150 different players already off the jump. And that's not even getting into a bunch of other ideas and capabilities, right? To say that one player loses ping, right? And they just have to disconnect, right? You'll need another player to fill in the gap, all that other kind of stuff. And that's probably one of the main reasons Concord failed on jump, because they didn't have a big enough player base. No one was interested in a live service shooting 5v5 arena battle shooter, so they just pulled the plug and no one really got their refund back, if I remember correctly. Besides the point, that's the main reason why we are talking about indie games. Because indie games, I feel like, the publishers of this game, which is Enter the Gungeon, if I haven't already explained that, is Devolver Digital. Devolver Digital, I think, is doing a way better job at marketing and overall being able to encapsulate their specific games that they're publishing for, right? They know the plight of being a developer and being an indie developer at that, and being able to try to make their own run-and-jump studio to get their prototype working. So Devolver Digital is able to actually fund these games, these very niche games, and bring them to a better light, to give this specific niche audience a bigger reach, you know? Give it a little bit more engagement with the rest of the world. So, what is Dodge Roll doing now? What is Dodge Roll doing right now? Not much, if I noticed correctly. I mean, here's the thing. They're working on an arcade game. I literally saw, like, you can pre-order a cabinet for a game that they're making using, like, one of those Duck Hunt guns. Now, I don't really understand why. I mean, it's a very niche audience. You're going even more niche. I mean, it's fair. It's valid, of course. But you can't... I'm not going to engage with that right now. They also made a sequel to Enter the Gungeon. We don't need to talk about that as well, because I've never played it or interfaced with it, nor did anyone really in the community really care about it. So I feel like they're kind of a one-hit wonder in a specific, very specific way. They made a game that was very successful in a specific audience that likes roguelikes and likes hard games. But no one really outside of that bubble interfaced with Enter the Gungeon. Enter the Gungeon is kind of a one-and-done deal. You have the game, you have the sequel, and that's pretty much it. You have the arcade game now. We're not really getting that much done here. Whatever. Besides the point. There's a reason why this game is niche. And it's because of the genre. Let's not be silly here. It's a roguelike bullet hell dungeon crawler, right? With a game with such an experimental game architecture, it's with any one of these genres would have been enough. Let's just say it's not an open world survival crafting game. We're not making tools from sticks, right? We're getting guns from chests, right? So let's go into the mechanics real quick. Let's go into how this game actually plays, how this game works, and whether you should get it or not. You have at the beginning of the game, you have four different gungeoneers to choose from. This game is completely based in gun and bullet puns. So if you... the entire game is themed around, the entire aesthetic is themed around guns. You fight enemies in the gungeon, inside of this specific gungeon. You fight enemies that are shaped like bullets, that also have a gun that shoot bullets back at you, right? It's not even wordplay at this point, it's word massacre at this point. We're playing with words so much that they're losing oxygen and we need to take them out of the tank before they start to asphyxiate and not work for us anymore, you know? The English language was not meant to do this. They're called the gun dead, by the way. They're called the gun dead. And everything, and I mean everything, is themed around guns. We'll get to that in a moment, right? You have four different types of gungeoneers. I'll only mention one of them, because I remember in the Slay the Spire playthrough, or the episode that I went over, I kind of dilly-dallied between all the different types of characters, right? This is not necessary. I only played this game for roughly 3 hours within the entire week. So, you know. I only was able to play one character, and this was the Space Marine character. He has a cool pistol, he gets a little increase in accuracy, and that's about it. That's all you need. The main goal of the game is to get to the bottom of the dungeon and be able to forge a gun, be able enough to kill your past. Kill your past, you say? Well, that's a curious thing. All of these characters have supposedly have some kind of deep and tragic backstory, but again, I wasn't concerned enough to really give a damn. That's the one thing about this game, that it's not really interesting. At least lore-wise. Same thing with Slay the Spire, to be frank. There was not a lot of developments specifically with lore. It focuses on aesthetic gameplay. How you progress. Those kind of things. So how do you progress? Well, in the dungeon, there are 5 levels. Each of them have their fun little coding. You have the first level that's kind of like a weird castle theme. Then you get down to the second level, which is kind of a more, you know, crypt level. And then the third level is a mine. It's a mining rig. The fourth level is kind of like a hellish, frozen-over wasteland. And the fifth level is the forge. I'll be very frank with you all. I only got to the last level once. I only got to the fifth level absolutely once, one time, singular, only. Because this game is difficult. I'm sorry to tell you. It's difficult. It's unpredictable. More so than any other roguelike I've ever played. And bullet hells are just not my thing. That's the main reason why I haven't played this game in such a long time. And this game has been on my Steam library the same amount of time as Faster Than Light, for example. 2018, I'd say. But I still haven't really picked it up. Main reason being is because I don't have time. I'll go into a little bit of a tangent real quick. Here's the reason why I'm thinking of straying away from roguelikes. Mainly because the time commitment. With games such as, Helix 2, for example. Helix 2 is a confined, linear game that doesn't have anything to do with the extra story, right? You have nothing really to go through the game. You don't have a real reason to continue going through the game. That's what I meant to say, yes. You just play the game once, you experience it. It's like a movie. You just put it away for a couple of years. And then eventually, if you want to experience the game again, you boot it up again. Or if you want to experience the game right away, because it was such a masterpiece in the craft, then be my guest. With games like Enter the Gungeon, there is no ending. You play the game continuously unlocking things, and when you die, you get right back to the start and you try again. The games are very, very addictive, and it's very easy, like with Slay the Spire, to get sucked into a hole. To realize that this game is taking over your entire life. With no real benefit. Except for, a good time, I guess. I would like to debate whoever said this phrase first. The phrase of no time wasted. No time having a good time is time wasted, right? Because I take great offense to that. Look, I've worked myself to the bone. In the past week, right? And imagine if I just spent my entire week just playing this game, Enter the Gungeon, and trying to get to the final boss, which is a cool gun-themed dragon, right? What would I have accomplished in that time, right? What would I be able to save for myself? I guess, technically, it isn't time being enjoyed because you're constantly feeling guilt, right? That's another thing that video games are very good at. You can look at the time for 1 minute. You can look back at the time. Oh, it's an hour past. Oh, no. Ah, crud. What am I going to do? You get sucked into these games. Enter the Gungeon was no exception. I could feel myself, the reins being tugged. I can finally feel myself getting into the groove. But it's good. Because this format allows me to continue cycling through different types of games. But anyway. Let's talk about the separate levels. Each of these levels have different enemies that you encounter during the dungeon, during your playthrough. And they also consist of other different rooms, such as shops and chest rooms, right? You have shops, which include a cool shop owner that has, a cute little items on sale. Now, the interesting thing about this game, not the only thing that's interesting about this game, but one of the things that's very interesting about this game is that how they are able to jam-pack so many little secrets inside of the game. Like, I remember once I was looking up online, like, there was some specific thing about a secret room, and I was like, how do you get into here? Turns out, there is a few places, a few rooms that have a fireplace in them. If you have a gun that shoots cold bullets, such as a snowball gun or a few other guns of that caliber, you can cool off the fireplace, which then allows you into a secret room. You press a lever in that room. It unlocks a secret room inside of the level, which you then go into. There's a bunch of little loot stuff into it, and then there's like a little grate you can go into, and there's like a secret sewer level. And I'm like, I would have never, 10% of people, I would expect like 0% of people to experience this specific level inside the dungeon. There's like secret levels, secret characters. When you beat the level, there's like extra content you can unlock at the end, like unlocking specific dungeoneers. It's a deep game, but at the end of the day, you just don't have time for it. I don't have time to spend 250 hours on the game. I'm sorry. There was one specific YouTube video that I was so tempted to click on. It specifically stated that I spent 250 plus hours unlocking every single item, get this, without dying. That means you have to beat the game back to back consistently without dying, right? Because if you die, it's not like you're restarting the game. You're actually restarting the entire game. That is insanity. That is insanity defined. I respect it. I respect the cause. I respect the plight. But again, like I said, no one has any time for these kind of games anymore. Right? We're all busy. We're getting beat around the clock. Got any time? No, I don't. Of course I don't. Sorry. I just don't have it anymore. I gotta stick with more, you know, investing experiences rather than just grinding out a specific game forever. It's the experience of life. It's the experience of art as a whole, you know what I'm saying? Anyway, besides the point, what was that? Right. You can buy, based on the amount of casings that you get, which are your currency in this game, along with keys, which are also bullet-shaped. You can buy items, and you can unlock chests. Now, unlocking chests is easy. You just use a key, and then you're able to unlock it. Right? Simple enough. You get either an item that's either passive or usable, active, or you get a cool new gun. Same thing with the shop, except you're using casings. You can buy items from the shop. You can also buy guns from the shop, but you can also buy other attributes, such as health, shields, and also keys, if you are destined to buy those kind of things on your run, specifically. These runs are also very lengthy, as I've noticed. They can span anywhere from, if you're bad, to, say, I don't know, 10 minutes, to, say, roughly 50 minutes, up to an hour. Each level, I'd say, is about 10 minutes, so if you're bad, then you could even get it down to, I don't know, 0 seconds, but that's in the case you don't know how to dodge roll. Alright? There's a bunch of other neat little mechanics they added to this game, so if you're interested, you have a dodge roll, of course. You can dodge through bullets, make sure that they don't hit you, but also it kind of eats up your frames, so you can't do any inputs while you're dodge rolling. That being said, there's another easier way to dodge bullets. If there's a table in the way, if there's a table, you can flip that table and it becomes your own special little defense, which is also pretty nifty. However, the bullets, the enemies in this game, also have that same type of ability. It's like a fun little action movie shootout, right? They flip over a table, you flip over a table, you're standing behind the table. It's kind of like Han Solo, you shooting the enemy while they're shooting back at you in the bar, right? But other than that, you don't really have that many diverse options, personally. In my personal opinion, you don't have that many diverse ways to use your items. What's more interesting, though, is finding synergies between items. Now, when I say synergies, when we're talking about Slay the Spire, we're mainly talking about the ways that cards interact with each other, right? Say I have, like, a cool, like, dark orb build that I can use to accumulate a lot of damage against enemies, right? Say I have a card that allows me to gain more accumulation on a specific dark orb at one specific time. I imagine that a lot of you, if you did your homework, understand what I mean. Those are what called synergies, right? Say I have a thing that allows me to get, like, I don't know, gain 3 strength, and I have another card that gives me double strength whenever I play it. That's another synergy. But those synergies are based on the actual cards themselves, and not actual mechanical changes. In Entered the Gungeon, however, Enter the Gungeon provides you with actual benefits by combining these different items together. Like, for example, if you have Poison Bullets, which is a specific passive item, and you have it's a poison gun. It shoots out poison bullets as well. It gives you a specific benefit by combining those items, and your gun becomes even more powerful. I think in this context, whenever you shoot 2 bullets, it makes a connecting beam of poison that damages all the enemies inside of that beam. So you can go shoot on the left, shoot on the right, covers the entire room, and it completely poisons everybody. That is one of the more satisfying elements of this game. But you know what's not satisfying? Is when you're in the game and you die. I know. It's possible, right? When you lose all your health, you do die. In the game and in real life. I know, it's crazy. It's crazy. Don't call me out on this. It's what they're trying to keep it a secret from you. They say that if you lose health, you actually gain life. That's not how it works. That's not how it works. Don't take everything you read at face value, man. One thing I also kind of find weird is the map, right? So in Slay the Spire, you just have a kind of fixed map, right? You go room to room. There's no real crossover. You can't go back to any rooms that you've already visited. In Enter the Gungeon, however, because it's more of a Binding of Isaac-esque game, you can go back into rooms. But again, your character is a bit slow, so how do you get back to rooms faster? There's the little teleporters on the map that you can select when you're in the map menu. However, I don't see the reason why. Here's my thing, right? Why have specific teleportation built into the game, right? When they're not in every single room. That's the main gripe I have with this mechanic, right? Because if you're in a teleporter, if you teleport to a room that also has a teleporter in it, right? You still have to go through the rooms that don't have a teleporter in it to get to the place that you want to go, right? So I feel like it's just wasting time, right? I want to get to the action as fast as possible, which is why I think Slay the Spire is so well put together. Enter the Gungeon, on the other hand, just kind of like, okay, you just teleport. Now you walk to the rest of the... You're going to use your legs, mister, and you're going to walk to the rest of the room. I don't want to see you... You look at your watch, look at your Fitbit right now. I want to see that step meter go up, right? No, like, I don't see the reason why it needs to be that way. I want to cause an action. I don't want to stop for a second unless I am just, like, purposely stopping myself, right? You don't dictate the action. I want to dictate the action. Enter the Gungeon, right? But it's fine. That's kind of a more nitpick than an actual gripe itself. It's a fine mechanic, besides the point. Another weird thing about this game is, say in Binding of Isaac, right? If you've ever played that game, you know there's going to be a lot of items that you collect throughout of it, right? You unlock a chest, for example, and you get a permanent upgrade, or you get to find like one of those like cards that you can collect and does a specific effect, like hurt everyone on the screen, or give you a bunch of money, or duplicate everything on the screen as well, right? And say you don't want to pick up an item at a specific moment. You're like, okay, I can save that for later. I can come back to it. In Enter the Gungeon, no. There's actually a funny little rat that steals your before you can even grab it. Like, what's the point of that? What are we doing here? You know? Like, what? It doesn't make any sense. Like, I put I put a specific item in a room, right? I leave that room for 5 seconds. They come back and they leave a little note saying, "Hey, sorry, man, I stole your watch. I stole your funny little ring. I stole your gun." Screw you, man. I wanted that ring. Whatever. Doesn't matter. Point is, each level ends with a fun boss. Now, these are probably one of the best things about this game. I've said a lot of negative things about this game. Let's bring it back around. There's a fun little bit of game to be had specifically with. Also, I just want to double check the thing real quick. Hold on. What? Stop. Turn it off. I don't want to hear him. He's talking too much. He's talking way too much. He yaps forever. He doesn't stop. It's one of my main attributes. Anyway, I'm just making sure that the live is working right now for the three listeners in the audience right now. Granted, here's the idea, right? You have a main boss at the end of each level. They're all unique based on what level you're on. So for the first level, there's three different types of bosses. Or actually four different types of bosses, I think. There's the twins, which are two big bullets that are, you know, twins. And they, one wears sunglasses, and if you kill one of them, the other one gets really pissed and starts to go super aggro mode against you. There's a birdman who shoots missiles out of his mouth and also has a... Like I said, these are just very fun. And they all have pun names as well. Let's look at some of them. You know what? This is how we're going to end off this episode. I'm just going to look up all the names of these different bosses, and we're just going to go through them and see how punny they are. Boss names... Gungeon. All right. Bosses. And now there might be some of them that I haven't seen before. So, you know, they're not all puns. Thank you. Of course. Of course. Thank you. That'd be crazy. All right. So you got the first level, which is called the Keep of the Lead Lord, right? The Lead Lord, who knows who the Lead Lord is? But there's a big statue towards him in the center of the room that you end up in. The final bosses of this first level are the Bullet King, which is a guy in a throne that shoots bullets in a fun AoE attack that you have to dodge constantly. He's probably the hardest one out of all these bosses because you have to constantly use what are called blanks in order to wipe out all the enemy bullets on screen. Of course, this gets a little bit taxing, especially when they're constantly firing bullets at you, so you use them sparingly and use them wisely. The Gatling Gull, there you go, there's your first pun. The Gatling Gull uses a gigantic Gatling gun to shoot you. Pretty self-explanatory. Also, again, shoots missiles out of his mouth. Trigger Twins, like I said also, one of them smiles constantly, the other one wears sunglasses. And they shoot at you using their guns. Again, pretty self-explanatory. So, next bosses include the Ammoconda. Ah, you got me. You got me. The Ammoconda is made out of bullet shell casings. And he's constantly eating these little nugget creatures on screen that he gains power from. Besides the point, he's a quite annoying boss because all of his bullets kind of move in a snake pattern. So you have to dodge out of the way in time in order to make sure that they don't hit you. The Beholster, a pun off the Beholder, he's kind of like the main icon of most of the promotional material on Enter the Gungeon. That's what I noticed, at least on the album cover. It shows him everywhere. Very cool design also. He's just holding a gun in every single one of his hands instead of there being an eye in every single little tentacle, which I think is pretty cool. And also he summons little eyelings, I guess you could call them. I don't know their actual lore canonical name, but, you know, besides the point. And you have the Gorgon. The Gorgon. Get it? Get the Gorgon? Like, the person that turns you to stone. Probably one of the easier ones, mainly on the premise that it doesn't really... It's way easier to dodge their attacks. They also shoot an AoE like in the Bullet King, but compared to the Bullet King, they're actually easier because they make little openings inside of the bullets in order for you to easily dodge them. Maybe a little bit more, you know, technical, but it's not as random. Also, they have a scream attack that makes you turn to stone, which is also pretty easy to dodge. Besides the point. The Black Powder Mine. Now, this is where we start to get the unshifty territory, because I've only encountered this... I only encountered the last... the third boss once, because that's how far I got, within 3 hours. So bear with me here. The rest of these are going to be based on material that I focused on years ago. So, again, bear with me. The Cannon Balrog. See, like I said, an affront to God and the English language. The amount of puns you can make with gun-related assortments. So, the Cannon Balrog is a gigantic cannonball that is shaped like a Balrog. As interestingly as that is. If you don't know what a Balrog is, read The Lord of the Rings. I'm doing that right now. Look, you can't expect me not to do the homework. And you can't expect yourself not to do the homework either, alright? If you're a real fan... No, I love all listeners, including the ones that just listen on the fly. Probably you're being very studious, I can imagine. You're writing down, I don't know, very important equations to solve cancer or something like that? I don't know. Besides the point. You'll love this next one. The Mine Flayer. Not the Mind Flayer, if you're into D&D. The Mine Flayer. He holds a gigantic bell that he's holding at gunpoint, and the bell looks pretty depressed, I have to say. He has a sad face on their visage, and the Mind Flayer looks very intimidating, indeed. I don't remember exactly what the mechanic was with this, but I remember the bell was very annoying to dodge, because it's like the Gorgon on steroids. Because you expect like the bullets to move outwards from him, but they're actually moving like down like a weird curve. Besides the point, I don't even know what this last one is. The Treadnought. It looks like a little like one of the little guys, but in a gigantic cannon that also has a face. All the characters, by the way, have a face on them. I don't know if you knew this. Besides the point. Next up, a bunch of other ones. Okay, the only one I know. I'm gonna skip the High Priest and the Warmonger because Wallmonger. Sorry. Because the only one I know is the Kill Pillars. Four separate pillars that are possessed by ghosts that try to shoot you, which is very fun. You have to defeat all of them in order to deactivate the whole four of them. And it's quite annoying. Quite annoying indeed. And of course, the final boss is the High Dragoon. Sorry, the High Dragon. Sorry, the puns took over me for a second. I had to scream at the demons. I had to do an exorcism live on the show. And of course, there's a bunch of other mini bosses, perhaps a few other ones. You could actually fight the stupid rat. Oh my gosh, that's crazy. Besides the point, this game is pretty fun. But the main critiques that I have to say about it. It goes with all the other installments of roguelikes, right? It's the idea of making your time worth it. Does each run feel unique, or does each run feel like it was worth your time? Because I feel like Slay the Spire appreciates your time more than this game, personally. Because with Slay the Spire, you have a pretty linear track. You can obviously choose which path you're going down, or what enemies you fight along the way, or what, you know, event markers you hit, or if you rest, or if you go to the shop, whatever. But it's, at the end of the day, it's a pretty linear system, and you can constantly modify and change your deck in a very unique way that I don't think the Enter the Gungeon really has. Even with Binding of Isaac, it feels like it wastes less time, because at the end of the day, I can kind of picture myself playing that game more than Enter the Gungeon. On the main premise, that it just feels more polished, it has more gameplay to it. And again, we're pitting a bunch of games that are perfect in their own right against each other. But at the end of the day, we have to kind of also critique our own community, because we have to make sure that they're kind of polished in a way, right? Because if we're going to go against like the gigantic AAA market, right, we have to make sure that these games are perfect in all capabilities,
and in all styles. Not to say that Enter the Gungeon is not right in its own way. Just me personally, I feel like in a lot of ways, it kind of goes down a path that wastes your time more often. Or wastes my time more often. I'm a busy man. I got a bunch of stuff to do. You know what I'm saying? And I feel like when you're constantly treading through different things, you don't know what guns do what. You have specific synergies that you kind of stumble into. It feels more like luck than an actual, you know, skill-based, strategy-based game. You're just going through the motions rather than actually making a unique gameplay loop each time you play it. The main goal of this game is to defeat enemy. You shoot gun, you defeat enemy. It's simple. And I completely understand if people like that. But Slay the Spire, you know, what's the goal? Of course, it's also kill enemy, get to the end of the game. But how you do that is completely different on each different gameplay loop, on each different game. The way you just construct your deck is going to make an entirely different gameplay experience. And that's something that you can control. Enter the Gungeon just gives you random guns that do different things, and you're like, what am I supposed to do with this? If it's a crappy gun like a pea shooter, what am I supposed to do with this, you know? But that's just food for thought. I hope you enjoyed. I hope you enjoyed Ladles and Gems. That is the end of episode 6, based on Enter the Gungeon. Of course, if you have any recommendations, do let me know. You can follow me on Independent Incidentals on Instagram, of course. And if you are interested of being a guest on the show, also leave me a DM. I'll be more than happy to talk about some niche little game that you're interested in. Or we can just talk a shop on some random topic that doesn't really get that much press coverage. So, with that, a little sippy for you all. What fun. With that note, I'll see you all next week. Of course, we're going to be talking about some more games that I'm going to be looking. I'm going to dig through my library. Maybe we can go away from the roguelike genre, and we can kind of divulge into more interesting territory, such as perhaps more story-based. I was thinking of doing a kind of like a look back. This entire month has already been kind of, you know, with Facet and Light, Enter the Gungeon. These have been games that have been on my Steam library for so long. We could do a bit of like a themed month, for example. Nostalgia. Kind of like what I did last time, except it's not confined to one episode. So next week, perhaps I can talk about things that kind of influenced me, right? Why I got into games in the first place. Perhaps we could have Krista as a guest. Who knows? Who knows? But with that, I think we are done for this episode. What should I leave you on? I've been playing this playlist a lot. It has some nice songs on it. Specifically, Into the Breach and Hollow Knight. So I'll leave you with some of these songs. We'll do Pinnacle Robotics. By the way, of course, I can't forget to credit the ones I played at the start. So, the first track was the Enter the Gungeon original soundtrack by Dose One, yes. Dose One created this specific song called Boss Battle Beating. If you want to listen to that or the rest, you can listen to it on Spotify. And, of course, the other one was King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, Planet B, one of their finest metal albums. So, with that, I'll leave you with a few tracks by Ben Prunty, who also made the Facet and Light soundtrack, as I mentioned in the last episode. I will cue up the Pinnacle Robotics, because that's a pretty solid vibe there. I'll also cue up by Christopher Larkin and Amelia Jones, The City... No? Yeah, I've already said it, so why not? City of Tears. And last but not least, we'll do Iniquity Row. Fantastic. I'll see you all next week.
Bye-bye. See you all later.